Mike Schlossberg and Ryan McKenzie are at the end of their rookie seasons in the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. They are both annoyingly young with great political futures.
And good looking.
Mike Schlossberg is a Democrat, which makes him a member of the minority caucus in the House. Ryan McKenzie is a Republican and therefore in the majority. They're both pretty bright guys. Ryan, a graduate of a little college known for its liberalism, a school called Harvard University. You may have heard of it. And Mike, a graduate of homegrown Muhlenberg College. I'm Alan Jennings. I'm your host. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse on WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. The smartest listeners in Lehigh Valley, just so you both know that. The WDIY gives me this opportunity to host Lehigh Valley Discourse at least once a month, and gives me the opportunity to bring the kinds of public affairs issues to smart listeners that I think are important. And one of the things that's really most important is trying to solve problems, and it seems to be getting harder to do that every day. But in an era of that partisanship that has often crippled government, these two guys get along, right?
We do. Well, we're on the air at least, but yes, absolutely.
So let me welcome you, Mike Schlossberg, and Ryan McKenzie. And so thanks for being willing to join the show. Let's start with, kind of laying out where you guys are ideologically. I mean, one's a Democrat, one's a Republican. If somebody were to ask you, and I will, where you put yourself on the political spectrum, where do you put yourself?
For me, at least, I certainly find myself more liberal on social issues than on economic issues. I consider myself more of a pragmatist than an ideologue. And I consider myself somebody who's willing to talk to the Republicans and trying to find a compromise that's in the best interest of the people I represent in the city of Allentown. So I consider myself probably more of a pragmatist than a bomb thrower.
Ryan McKenzie.
Yeah. And I think a little bit of what Mike said there is probably why we do get along. We are pragmatists. We want to get things done. And I obviously, being a Republican, I come from a background where I focus on limited government, getting solutions done, personal freedom, personal responsibility. And at the end of the day, though, what Mike and I are both looking for is getting those solutions across the goal line. And so as long as I'm advancing the agenda in a direction that's in line with my principled beliefs, I'm willing to make a compromise. And unfortunately, compromise has all too often become a bad word nowadays in politics. And I don't think that's the case. As long as you're true to your beliefs, there's still room to compromise and work with the other side.
There are so many high school students that are being imported into Pennsylvania, especially from New Jersey. And I got all those bright kids over there in New Jersey, and there ain't a lot of colleges over there, at least not good ones. You got Rutgers, you got College in New Jersey, you got Princeton. And so tons of New Jersey folks, come into Pennsylvania. We've got a ton of really great schools, including several right here in the Lehigh Valley. And yet we export a lot of college graduates. I mean, they don't stick around. And, I think that's an issue for a lot of us in our community. You've got to have young blood in the workforce for innovation and so on and so forth. Why did you guys decide to stick around?
Sure. Well, I'll take this. For me, personally, I grew up here in the Lehigh Valley. I was born and raised in Allentown. graduated from Parkland High School, and I'm actually the opposite. I went away to school. I went to NYU for undergrad and Harvard for grad school. But I came back home partly because of personal reasons. I really enjoy being close to my family and friends that I grew up with. But also, it's a changing Lehigh Valley. Over the past 30 years or so, we've seen the face of the valley economically change drastically. Instead of being so solely dependent upon one or two big companies like Bethlehem Steel, the economy here is much more diversified nowadays. And so there are a lot more job opportunities in the area. And that's the biggest difference I've seen as far as getting people to come back to the Lehigh Valley is if there's a job for them. I have an older sibling. Most of the people in his grade who went away to college never returned, whereas in my grade, just 5 years after him, 5 or 6 years after him, a lot of the people actually did return back home. But it was, again, because they had the benefit of being close to their family, but also because there was a job there waiting for them. So we certainly have a lot more to do on the economic front here in the Lehigh Valley to continue to diversify that economy and make sure that there are opportunities for young people. And that's what's going to get people to come back. The quality of life's great. The healthcare system's great. There are plenty of tourist attractions in the area. You're close to New York and Philadelphia. There's a lot to like about the Lehigh Valley, but if there aren't jobs here, people won't return to the area. So we need to do a lot more on the economic front to make it a better climate here in the Lehigh Valley.
Mike Schlossberg, you have been prepared to apparently risk your life by in front of angry mobs by confessing that you're actually from New Jersey.
I was going to lie actually and say that I was from Parkland or something like Ryan. But no, I joke about it. My dirty political secret is that I was born and raised in Livingston, New Jersey.
God, we hate that.
I know. And my running joke used to be that all I did was clog up Route 22. but I like to think I do a little more. I came here by way of Muhlenberg College. Actually, that's how I first got to Allentown. Livingston, where I grew up, was a wonderful place. I have no ill will, but what struck me as soon as I started getting involved in the community, which I did actually when I interned for my predecessor, Representative Mann, was that this place had a real sense of community and a sense of home. And it wasn't like the, for lack of a better term, the plasticine suburb that I grew up in. And so coming to Allentown, starting to really enjoy urban life, the benefits, the amenities, the diversity, things that I didn't have growing up, really made me fall in love with this place, and that's why I chose to stay. I think everything that Ryan said is dead on. Nobody's going to stay, certainly, if we don't have a job, and the dirty truth of the matter is that the Lehigh Valley does have a little bit of a higher unemployment rate than Pennsylvania, which does have a higher unemployment rate than the country as a whole. So we do need to do better in that front. We are rapidly growing. The economy isn't growing as fast as the people are. And the one thing I will add to what Ryan said is we need the high-quality education systems. And colleges, we certainly have options almost completely across the spectrum. But what we need to do better at, in a lot of respects, I really think, is the basic ed. And that's my greatest passion. That's why I ran for office, was for the education system. And some of our, there's such diversity, and I mean that in a negative way, in that you have some school districts that do so well and that thrive with minimal tax burden, and then you have others like the Allentown School District that are struggling and that do need to do better. We need to do better for districts like the Allentown School District, and that's my greatest passion, certainly.
Mike Schlossberg, did you just pull off something? Are you like extraordinarily lucky, or was that some kind of like a masterful political trick you pulled off last year?
It was a combination. Now,
what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I do. But for the people listening at home, I had a very bizarre circumstance in that I was completely unopposed for my primary and my general election running for an open seat. I was the only Met person running for the House in Pennsylvania that had that good fortune.
So what's up with that?
I'd like to, in my mind, say that at least part of it was skill. I was a member of Allentown City Council. I was an employee of the Chamber of Commerce. I was extremely active, ran around a lot, did a lot, was involved in a lot of things, more so now, certainly. And my very popular predecessor, Jen Mann, endorsed me, and she was the first person to say, you should really be my successor. And that helped. A huge chunk of it, without a doubt, was luck. I did have one primary opponent. I probably was going to pick up a second one. When the Supreme Court nullified the redistricting maps, they actually took my opponent, bumped him out of the district. Then originally I had a Republican opponent, but he didn't actually live in the state as long as he was constitutionally mandated to do so. And when he made that realization, he withdrew from the ballot on his own, very much to his credit, and wound up with no opposition.
Guys like me are like intensely jealous of that kind of luck. You
know? Actually, I think guys like Ryan, yeah, who have had exceptionally competitive. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah, no, I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum as far as luck goes, I guess. When it came time for my elections, about $250,000 was spent against me my first campaign.
And about a half a dozen candidates or more.
There were about five or six initially who came forward and were competing for the slot. So I came through quite a gauntlet. I wish I would have had that luck that you had, Mike.
But, I will say I had a gauntlet.
We both ended up in the same spot at the end of the day.
Well, when I ran for city council, I had a gauntlet. I was a member of Allentown City Council for 2.5 years, and that was the race where I had a lot of fun. That was a great experience and one that I'm sure Ryan can emphasize with. You win by going door to door. Money is great. Money is helpful. But on a local level, and for Ryan and I, this is about as high as you could go, where door to door really has a powerful impact. When a candidate shows up and humbles themselves before a voter and comes to their door and say, "Hi, I'm so sorry to bother you. My name's Mike Schlossberg. My name's Ryan McKenzie. I'm here to ask for your vote, and I'm here to answer any questions or let you know a little bit about myself." That means something to people. That's how I won in 2009 when I ran for council, Ryan. I'm sure you could say the same thing.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I that year that I ran for office, and I've continued knocking on doors subsequently since being in office, but that first time through, I knocked on 14,000 doors that year. Huh. And, you know, certainly talking to the electorate is obviously incredibly important to understand the issues that they're focused on, but also, like Mike said, to get face-to-face time with them and talk about issues that are important to them, you can't replace that. You simply can't. And I find that people are very well informed about the issues. They're passionate about them. They want to talk about them. All too often, it's just because they're going on with their own busy lives of, you know, caring for their family and working and doing all of the responsibilities that are important to them, that they don't have a chance to get too engaged unless you actually show up at their door. But when you do, they love it. They want to talk about everything under the sun, and I'm always happy to do that. So I try and get out and do door-to-door as much as possible.
You know, not a lot of people know this, but when I went to Dickinson College, comparable in many ways to Muhlenberg College, and at the age of 18, I graduated from Mass High School. I ran for school board in East Penn School District, and my scheme was that I was going to be the youngest member of a school board in Pennsylvania, and a few years later, I'd take advantage of that and run for state house and, you know, be the youngest state house member and so on and so forth, and eventually be the king of the world. And I
elected
lost,
king of the.
I'd be really good at it too. I lost, and believe it or not, I lost by less in the Republican primary than I did in the Democratic primary. I lost by 49 votes, and that ended my political career right there. just to reinforce the
but it was a game for the rest of the valley, Alan. That's the way to look at it.
Well, just reinforce my, you know, what I was saying about my luck and how resentful I am, Mike, of you. So if you ever, you know, catch me writing stuff on bathroom walls about you, that's the source.
I just thought it was for my looks.
Ryan, you know, unlike Mike, at least as far as the Lehigh Valley is concerned, you come from political royalty. I mean, your dad was chair of the Republican committee it seemed like decades, wasn't he?
Yeah. So, you know, certainly I did grow up in a family with a strong history of elected office. He was a South Whitehall Township commissioner and obviously, like you said, involved with the party. So civic engagement was something that I was brought up in, and it was stressed to me at an early age. And, you know, certainly something that I got involved in student government then and things like that. And so I was always very interested in it and always engaged. Was not something that I was looking to do in elected office as a career. But for me, it was just kind of a fortuitous set of circumstances where my predecessor, Doug Reichle, moved on to actually be a Lehigh County judge. And had that not happened, you know, I don't know when that position would have opened up otherwise. He had been there 9 years. He was very well liked and respected in the district. So it was just right place, right time. But certainly, you know, I had worked on a lot of different campaigns and activities. So, you know, had certainly built up a knowledge base. And as a staff member, I had worked in policy, so had the skill set to run for office. And fortunately, I guess that's where my good luck came in, just being in the right place at the right time.
Well, you talked about, you know, knocking on doors. I mean, it seems to me that having a father who was, you know, such a prominent activist Republican would probably have been helpful as well. No? I mean, it was, wouldn't that have been pretty helpful to you?
You know, again, certainly with the understanding of the process and the knowledge was very helpful. But he had been out for quite a while. He had exited in, I believe it was the early 90s or so. So a lot of time had passed since he was involved in, you know, he was involved at the local level. You know, certainly, no doubt, was a help and a benefit, and very appreciative of all the support that both he and my mom gave throughout the political process. You know, getting elected is definitely something you don't do on your own. You know, it's something that takes the support of your family, your friends, your community. A lot of people are involved, so definitely very appreciative of all the help they gave.
So what is it that led you, I mean, Ryan, you talked about being raised in a family that was, you know, very civic and very political, and how that motivated you. Mike, was there anything that was like a turning point for you? Is there some incident that said, you know, I'm going to go out and try to make a difference and run for office and subject myself to the scrutiny of voters and all that kind of stuff?
That's a good, really good question. I had an interest in politics since middle school, and my dad was always really into government and politics, and kind of helped expose me to that interest. And in the course of doing that, my senior year of college, when I thought I was going to law school, I interned with Representative Mann. That's when I first started getting plugged into the Valley. And that was during the buildup for Coca-Cola Park, when she was trying to work to make that happen. She was instrumental in making that happen. And I got to watch what she did. And I got to watch the sort of impact that she had. And eventually it got to the point where I'm looking at her going, my God, you wake up and get out of bed every day and you get to represent 65,000 some odd people and be their voice. That's an incredible power and an incredible responsibility. And you can do so much good. You know, again, practically the first words out of my mouth were education. In Jen's time in the State House, the per student funding for the Allentown School District tripled on the state level. That's massive. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of kids whose lives she touched, and they'll never know her name. And to have that kind of ability to make that kind of difference was something I wanted and was something I was willing to work my butt off to get, and that was what opened my eyes, watching her do what she did.
Sometimes what your parents want you to do is like the opposite of what you want to do, and and so, I mean, Ryan, I want to make sure that I don't slight you of the opportunity to say that, you know, if there was anything else that, you know, any kind of turning point.
No, you know, I think it certainly was actually maybe not what my parents actually wanted me to do. You know, my mom, being around politics, had seen the ugly side of campaigns, yeah. And she actually warned against, you know, getting involved. She said, you know, obviously, as Mike said, you can make a big difference. But at the same time, there's a lot of ugliness to political campaigns. And, you know, is that something you want to get involved with? And so she really made me think about my decision before I got involved, and, you know, offered good maternal advice there to really think it through and make sure I was doing the right thing that I wanted to do. And at the end of the day, obviously, I've been very happy. Like Mike said, you have an ability to have a tremendous impact on people's lives. And at the end of the day, when you do get things done that you believe in, it's very rewarding.
Go ahead, Mike.
Just to briefly add to what Ryan was saying, you know, about your mom, it's always the family that has the harder time. Like, I remember your campaign got pretty ugly. My campaigns have had moments of it. The online comments, things like that, you know, you start to develop a skin, but it's your family that really takes the brunt of it. My wife wanted to kill people, and I can only imagine what your mom wanted to do when she saw some of the TV ads against you. So that they're the ones that suffer the most in
a
campaign.
Those hateful online comments actually motivate me. I mean, I like when I make, you know, like I write an op-ed piece or something, I can't wait to check out what people say.
You have a sickness. I'm telling you this now. There's something wrong.
I'm proud of it. this is Lehigh Valley Discourse, and you're listening to WDIY, an NPR affiliate. The community-based radio station for the Lehigh Valley. Mike, I'm Alan Jennings, the host of the show. My guest tonight, State Representative Ryan McKenzie and State Representative Mike Schlossberg. We're going to get into their experiences in their first year, their first term as members of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives. Stick around.
Join us for Winter Blast 2014. WDIY's annual party is happening Saturday, February 1st at Miller Symphony Hall in Allentown. Tickets are available at wdiy.org. Winter Blast tickets include complimentary food, drinks, and the live rockin' sounds of the Doughboys. Go to wdiy.org and get your tickets today.
Welcome back. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I've been corrected. WDIY is not an affiliate of NPR. It is a full-fledged member of NPR, and I know that because the guy who is the operations director for the station is sitting over there making sure the buttons and the lights are all pushed at the right time, and that's Neil Heaver, who the poor guy is working overtime because I have no idea how to do those things, and so he's got to be here making them work. So, Neil, thanks for the extra effort. All right, so my guests tonight, State Representatives Mike Schlossberg and Ryan McKenzie, two annoyingly young elected state representatives with great political futures. I think they're both 20-somethings, right?
30 on the dot.
31.
Oh,
old
guys.
Here,
yeah. Okay.
I get to be the second youngest in the delegation, but Justin Simmons, the jerk, he beats all. Actually, it is kind of interesting, actually. The average age of a state representative, what would you say, Ryan, like mid-40s probably?
Could be.
Yeah. And in the Valley, we have three guys who are 31 or younger, Ryan, myself, and Representative Simmons, who's actually the youngest member of the House. So it's interesting that the Valley is willing to send young politicians into office.
And they have for many years.
Absolutely,
Mulusky, way back in the 70s, Kurt Zwickel was elected at the age of 23.
Kurt had my seat.
That was what my thinking was when I ran, and of course, my luck is not as good as Mike Schlossberg's luck. So you finished your rookie season. Actually, Ryan, I think you're a little bit more senior than Schlossberg is because you got elected in a special election when Doug went on to be a judge.
That's correct.
So you have a little bit more wisdom from the years of, you know, what, extra 6 or 8 months.
We joke about that, actually.
So how'd that rookie season work for you? I mean, what did you get out of it? Was it you happy about it?
Yeah, personally, I've been very satisfied with what we've been able to get done in the House. There have been three on-time balanced budgets that we've passed, which is a huge change from the previous 8 years under the Rendell administration when budgets would routinely get passed in October or December and really disrupt local governments, nonprofit organizations that maybe receive funding from the state. And at the end of those 8 years, the state was $4.2 billion in debt. And so, I've been proud that we have, since I've been in office, been able to have a fiscally responsible approach to government. And then, you know, personally, I've been able to pass two pieces of legislation since I've been in office. The first one was a piece of good government legislation, I would say, really cleaning up a department at the Department of Agriculture. It was the Bureau of Weights and Measures, very wasteful in terms of how they went about conducting business, and it was disruptive to lots of local businesses here as well. It was an inspections thing. They conducted several hundred thousand inspections a year, and they would come up with 10 or 12 problems that warranted a citation and a violation. And at the same time, they would routinely go around and shut down businesses for whole days of operation to inspect their weights and measures and timing devices. So we were able to change that around, make it more efficient and effective for those being inspected, local businesses, local governments, and also save money for the state. So that was the first thing I did. And then second, I took because of my background, I have a finance degree and an MBA. And so I was tasked with, by our leadership team, taking the lead on the tax reform code for 2013. And in that, we did some very significant reforms, closing the Delaware loophole. It was a loophole whereby corporations here in Pennsylvania were avoiding taxes to the tune of $50 million a year. We were able to close that loophole. And then with those revenues that we were able to keep here in Pennsylvania, we did things like eliminating the inheritance tax on small family businesses. We increased the net operating loss carry forward for larger businesses. That's something where if they have losses in 1 year, they can carry those forward to future years and bring down their profits. So that's very helpful for any business that's doing investments or maybe in the startup phase where they're going cash flow negative for a while. We did other things for startups. We mirrored the $5,000 deduction that's at the federal level for businesses in their first year of operation. So lots of good things in there. And also, on a personal note, I was able to in that bill include the exemption of realty transfer tax for ambulances and volunteer fire companies. And so that actually helped Zetroni Ambulance Corps and a volunteer fire organization down in the Berks County portion of my district. So I've been very happy that I've been able to get things done. That's what I came to office to do. And so I've found it very rewarding and a successful first term.
Mike, how do you feel about your rookie season?
Well, here's where some of the ideological differences start to pop up. I would describe my rookie season as fun and frustrating. I was able to walk away with having done a couple of real things, I think, for my district in the budget season. I worked very closely with Senator Brown to get the Allentown School District $9.6 million more than what was initially proposed in the governor's budget. We were one of, I think, only 21 school districts that was able to get additional funding above and beyond what was originally allocated. That resulted in us saving 25 teachers and reducing a proposed tax hike by a third. And while I'm very proud of that, this year we still lost 75 positions, and the year before that we lost 80, and the year before that we lost somewhere in the area of 150 to 200. So we've lost in Allentown, I want to say, between 300 and 350 teachers.
It's brutal.
In the fourth largest and third poorest district in the entire Commonwealth. Now, it's also not just an Allentown problem, the underfunding of education. Parkland School District lost 100 teachers in the past 3 years. This is a problem that's hitting other districts, poor urban districts like Allentown, harder, but it's also really going across the Commonwealth. Aside from that, so the fact that we were able to do anything to help out Allentown was, if you ask me my number one accomplishment in office, I would definitely say that. Having been a member of Allentown City Council during my time there, I chaired our Public Works Committee. I was an employee of the Greater Lehigh Valley Chamber of Commerce for 5.5 years, and those two things really gave me an appreciation for the need to actually invest in infrastructure, in water and sewer, roads, bridges, and mass transit. We obviously just completed a pretty contentious debate over a $2.4 billion transportation package. It was a very weird alignment the way that it ultimately shook out, but we did pass it. It did raise some taxes. It did raise some fees, but it'll more than pay for itself in terms of the average impact on Pennsylvania residents, on Pennsylvania businesses, and on Pennsylvania drivers. I always joke that if you have business and organized labor coming together saying we need something, it's probably a good idea. And I did vote yes on it. By voting yes on it, we were able to accelerate or add on projects that'll create $200 million in investment in the 132nd District in the next 5 years. I'm pretty proud of what we were able to do there.
I know you guys are both smart guys and with a pretty solid background politically, but did you go, did you learn much in your first year? You know, I mean, it's an institution. It's got customs and traditions and weirdos and bright stars and dark stars and all those kinds of things. Did you learn a lot as a first year member?
You get overwhelmed very easily when you first walk in the door because you think you have to know everything that's going on all the time. The dirty secret about the legislature is that 80 to 90% of the votes we take are on non-controversial, pretty mundane issues, like what Ryan was talking about with his legislation with the Department of Agriculture. That was before I was elected.
That's correct. Yeah.
But it probably passed unanimously.
Nearly. I think it had one or two votes.
Right. There. The overwhelming majority things that we vote on are completely they're no-brainers. They're things like updating land use codes, and they're the mundane, boring business of government. It's really only when you start to get into the hot-button controversial issues that you start to get real disagreement. And often those are also the biggest issues that have the most effect, so they're the ones that take up the most oxygen. There were the supposed big three issues: transportation, liquor privatization, and pension reform. And transportation was the only one that actually got done, and it was also realistically, I would say, the least controversial of the three, and the one that there was the most bipartisan agreement on. I think in the House, the final vote was something like 113, I guess, to 80 or 70 something along those lines. And there were about 70 Republicans and 40 Democrats that voted yes for it. A little more than half of each caucus put up the votes to make that happen in the House. And in the Senate, it was a landslide. It was a 43-7 vote on final passage. So that one, there was real bipartisan agreement.
You sound like Steve Samuelson now,
Mike. Because I'm pulling numbers out of my head.
That's,
and yeah.
That's weird.
Well, that's a compliment. You know, he's a smart guy.
He is a smart guy.
Those two issues, the issue of transportation was the most comparatively non-controversial of the big three. As you start to get into pension and liquor privatization, you're going to have some real disagreements, and those disagreements will continue. They're telling us pensions are going to be what's up next, and there will certainly be no shortage of controversy there.
Ryan, you went to Harvard, which means that you probably know everything you need to know. But, I mean, did you learn much when you went?
There is a lot to learn. And before I move on, let me just comment on Mike's last remark there about liquor reform and pension reform. Those are the two big issues that are going to be looked at again and revisited this year. And, you know, I'm obviously a big proponent of education as well. I got a great education in Parkland. Want to make sure that's there for everybody else. And pensions are the biggest driving cost in education here in Pennsylvania right now. So that is something that needs to be dealt with. It's no doubt a difficult issue, but something does need to be worked on there. As far as things I've learned, I would say, you know, just off the top of my head, the three big things I've learned. One is that you need to focus when you're in office. You need to set your own agenda on the things that you feel are important for your district and work on those things. So just really focus on your issues, because you can really get dragged in many different directions. And obviously, you do have to be flexible and working on a lot of different issues at all the time. But at the same time, if you have a focus, I think you're more likely to get things done at the end of the day. So that's very helpful. The other thing I would say that I learned that was maybe most important in this process is that you really have to stay true to your beliefs and your convictions. You are going to, in some instances, get some very significant pressure, even from some of your friends or people that would say that they're your friends. But at the end of the day, they don't have the interests or the same interests of your district at heart. They might be from another district. They might be in a statewide position. But you really have to do what you think is best for your district. And once you know that and you understand your position and where you are going to be at the end of the day, you have to stay true to those convictions. And that's not always easy. There have been times already, you know, since I've been in the legislature where you're pressed on things. But, you know, coming out of it, you know, I think I've certainly grown by making the right decisions here in my first term and gaining confidence and feeling after the fact and knowing that I've done the right thing has certainly going to be making it easier going forward to make those tough decisions again, because you got to stick with your instincts and your beliefs.
You're listening to listener-supported Community Public Radio. This is WDIY. The show is called Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. by day, most nights, and for that matter, my whole freaking life. I'm the executive director of the Community Action Committee of the Lehigh Valley. My guests tonight are State Representatives Mike Schlossberg and Ryan McKenzie. Before we get into the issues, which I want to make sure we do, were there any specific situations where you had some kind of epiphany about the state legislature? Like, this place is even more corrupt than the most cynical folks believe. I mean, did you have any epiphanies that were like, what in the world is...
I'll kind of take what you just said, but go the other way. I think the place is less corrupt than most people believe. Mm. There is certainly the share, and it's a bipartisan statement, of people who, beyond a shadow of a doubt, do not have the best interests of the people at heart. They're there because they can never get another job in the real world, and they just care about one thing only, and that's themselves, and as such, their reelection and keeping all the perks and benefits that come with the job.
And that's not partisan. I mean, that's
both
sides.
No, there is no doubt about
it.
Yeah. I have met some of the meanest, nastiest, most hateful people I've ever met in my life in the legislature. Mm. I've also met some of the best, including very strongly members of the other party. And the epiphany for me was the realization that the overwhelming amount or the overwhelming number of the members on both sides of the aisle were good people. Even disagreeing with them, I'm looking at them going, they're not evil. They're not lost in the ether. They're people who think
they're just wrong.
You're right. Well, and you kind of, you know, that's kind of what I think. I'm sure that's what they think about me. But you kind of come to the realization that these people just want what's best.
Yeah.
They think that their way about it is doing what's best. And the overwhelming majority of people, with the exception of a small handful, really are good people. And you can get along with them. And you can have conversations with them because most of the people there are just incredibly friendly. And they're like you. They, at the end of the day, they go home tired and they rehash their decisions. And they think, did I make the right vote? Did I cut the right deal? Did I do this? At the end of the day, everybody wants to get home to their family. I mean, that's what we want to get home to our family and go, I hope I did some good work for the people I represent today. Overwhelming amount of people, number of people there want to do that.
Ryan McKenzie, any epiphanies?
You know, I think one thing is there is obviously a great sense of frustration with government a lot of times. And, you know, it's something that is on big issues and on small issues. And, you know, our process is intentionally difficult and long to pass legislation. That's how the framers of the Constitution and our forefathers have laid it out. But at the same time, that makes it very difficult to make even those small changes. And like Mike was talking about, the first piece of legislation that I passed was a good government piece of legislation. It passed nearly unanimously. And right from the start, we had an agreement between local government, state government, the Department of Agriculture, local businesses. Everybody was lined up, and it still took 6 months to get that change through the process. So, you know, I think even though our process is a good one, for some of these smaller, non-controversial things, it's frustratingly inefficient. And, you know, that's why I think a lot of times people have frustration is because on the outside, things are obvious and there's a very clear way to resolve a problem. But the learning that I had here is that even when common sense is out there and a solution is in mind, just the process is sometimes your biggest challenge.
Let's go through. We got some tough issues that I want to talk about. Let's see if we can do this fairly quickly. We're going to have a state budget. The governor's already setting up the issue by saying there's going to be another deficit. Mm-hmm. Are you going to get a budget done? And, you know, I want to make the point that yesterday was the 50th anniversary of President Johnson calling on the United States Congress to create the war on poverty. So, you know, of course, you know me. I'm going to wonder, are you going to screw poor people, the disabled, and school children again?
The governor has said we are looking at about a $1.4 billion budget hole. That's roughly 5% of Pennsylvania's budget. That's an enormous number, a number driven certainly by rising costs, in particular rising pension costs, but also driven by the fact that we've cut over $1 billion in tax revenue at the same time that we've declined to raise some limited rates like taxing Marcellus Shale, or with respect to what Ryan was saying before, really closing the Delaware loophole, freezing the corporate stock franchise tax. There's any number of ways that we could come very, very close to to eliminating this budget hole, but because the governor is not willing to look at even the smallest amount of tax increases, we're going to have a real hard time. I don't see how we get out of this without serious cuts.
Ryan McKenzie?
You know, I think on the budget, it's no doubt going to be another difficult budget season for us here in Pennsylvania. Revenues this in December were down $40 million. We are on track about $2 million off. It's a $12.28 billion has already been brought on in this year, and we are right on target. But again, December's numbers were down, so it's not looking good again this year in terms of the budget. So guaranteed more difficult decisions ahead, but I think at the end of the day, we will get a budget passed that focuses on our priorities, things like education and those other core critical services of government.
You're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. This is Lehigh Valley Discourse. I'm your host, Alan Jennings. My guest tonight, young state representatives and finishing their first year or so, Ryan McKenzie, Mike Schlossberg. Much more to talk about. Stick around.
Spread the word about your organization or business to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR news and locally produced music programs reaches thousands of locally engaged listeners each day. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable way to enhance your image and to provide information about your services to people who care. For more information, visit wdiy.org. So everybody thinks that I was going to play all stuffy, you know, old people, baby boomer music. So I snuck in some Morrissey there. That's just proof that I am much cooler than you thought I was.
I just thought that was hippie music. I don't listen to Morrissey at all.
Morrissey is way too cool.
Clearly.
Okay. We've got Ryan McKenzie, Mike Schlossberg. Let's get into some of the issues. Public education. What is it about you guys, Ryan, that you hate public education?
Oh, Jesus. Wow. No, I'm going to let you guys have fun with that. Okay, bye. Thanks.
I obviously am a strong supporter of public education. Again, I'm a graduate of Parkland High School, went all the way through the public school system, received a terrific education, and that really was the foundation and building block for greater academic success in my life. Again, going on to NYU and Harvard wouldn't have been possible without a strong public education.
So how do we get Allentown kids a good public education?
Yeah, and so, you know, one thing that I've been working on personally is it's a program called Career Bound. It's a piece of legislation which would offer career opportunities and awareness for students, specifically in areas like Allentown School District. They already have a pilot program like this. And what it would do is it would take the community colleges, the vo-tech schools, all different opportunities that are out there and available for these students, put them in front of these students in middle school and high school, take them out on career and business tours and really generate and foster excitement and interest in students, and then put them on career paths, which would get them to their goal. And so right now, career bound, that proposal that I have, it's a bill that I sponsored, has come out of the House. It came out in December. It passed unanimously, as Mike said. It's a $10 million tax credit program whereby businesses would donate to this program. They would receive a tax credit for it, but that money would go specifically to these schools to provide greater career awareness. And again, hopefully stimulate the students, make them interested in a career path, get them involved, and get them into a family-sustaining job in the future. And so we're going to be working on that in the Senate. And again, hopefully just another tool that we can add to the toolkits that are available to public schools.
Mike, you already talked about public education, so I'm going to skip you on this one. But I do want to get quickly into pension reform. You know, I hate to say this, but I don't think we have much of a choice but to switch to, you know, the 401k style. And, you know, the people who've already got their pensions, there's nothing we can do about that. But I think going forward, I don't think we have much of a choice but to go to a defined contribution as opposed to a defined benefit kind of plan. Mike, that's probably anathema to a guy who needs labor support. what do you think on
well,
that?
Well, I like to consider myself as somebody who doesn't necessarily stick to ideology, and somebody, as I said before, who's pragmatic. I don't like the switch to defined contribution for a variety of reasons, but first and foremost, they did an actuarial study on proposals to switch to a defined contribution and found that it would cost the state, I do not remember if it was $30 or $40 billion, but a very significant amount of money over a 30-year period. I mean, we'd wind up costing ourselves far more than we'd save for the sake of really kind of throwing an ideological bomb. Now, that being said, I'm not 110% opposed to some sort of pension reform. Having been a member of Allentown City Council, I saw what happened when the defined benefit system was abused blatantly and reprehensibly. You know, the pension crisis that we are in right now is a combination of a bunch of things. And yes, hindsight is 2020, but at a time when the stock market was at reaching all-time highs and the pension funds were flush, we increased benefits for both going forward and retroactively. We stopped investing in the pension funds from about 2001 to 2007. And then the stock market crashed twice in a decade. Now, again, this isn't something that's completely new. The one proposal that I would be willing to consider, and that's a big if right now, is really a hybrid system. It's taking a look at switching to a plan that would alter the structure by which benefits are accrued, but would still give a form of a defined annuity. It's very, very... It would take me hours to fully explain it, and I'll be honest, I don't completely understand it. The primary sponsor of that proposal is a Republican named Glenn Grell. And one of the many reasons I'm willing to consider this plan is because Representative Grell, who, as I said, is a Republican, is actually having conversations with all the public unions and trying to get their feedback and their buy-in. He's not looking to throw an ideological bomb. He's looking to make a real change and solve what is unquestionably a problem. And, you know, if we can get that buy-in, if we could get people to compromise, we can potentially solve what is a huge problem and what is becoming a crisis for school districts and municipalities.
Personally, if I was in the state legislature, I'd do whatever Pat Brown said we should do. I mean, you know, I'm just a huge fan of Pat's. Pat and I don't always agree on everything, but the guy is truly an amazing public servant, and I know he's put a lot of time into this one, and, you know, it would be tough to oppose whatever...
Absolutely. Senator Brown is the leader, I would say, in the Senate on issues such as pension reform. He's been involved with some of the earlier changes that have been made to the pension system in Pennsylvania. And, you know, his proposal and the things that he's looking at are in line with what you're talking about, Alan. So it's shifting to a 401k for new employees. And then also going forward, he has a proposal whereby he would do some pension obligation bonds to backfill. As Mike said, the state had not been making its contributions annually to the pension fund. So a way to do that would be backfilling with some pension obligation bonds. Those are two great starting points, in my opinion. And then really, if you close that gate off by putting new employees into a 401k system, I think you can at least close the gate. You can start wrapping your arms around that problem and start managing it going forward. Right now, it's a $49 billion unfunded liability in Pennsylvania. And that transition is something that's has a lot of debate around it. As Mike said, he's concerned about the transition cost of being 30 or 40 additional billion dollars. And there are other actuaries out there who say there's zero transition cost to going to 401k. So right now, there is a debate amongst the actuaries how you're going to calculate that. And that's what we're going to see as we go into that debate is really getting into the weeds and the numbers and figuring out what we think is all accurate and the best thing to move Pennsylvania forward.
The human rights issue of the 21st century is the is gay and lesbian human rights issues. progress has been almost stunning. What is the state legislature going to do on that issue this year?
The one thing that I think might actually happen, and I think Governor Corbett coming out in favor of this really pushed the ball forward, is the idea of making Pennsylvania a state in which it's illegal to right now, legal discrimination against somebody for sexual orientation or gender identity is legal. A gay person can be evicted from their home. They can be ejected from any public facility simply on the basis of their gender identification or sexual orientation. For the life of me, I can't fathom this. The vast majority of states have made this practice illegal. They have said sexual orientation and gender identity are the same as race, religion, gender, age, any other protected class. That some legislation to change that might occur. The bill has over 90 co-sponsors in the House. You need 101 or 102
to pass
to actually pass a bill. If it came for an up and down vote right now, I know it would pass. There are more conservative's not even fair. There are more reactionary elements of the House that are fighting tooth and nail to keep this bill from making it to the floor and seeing the light of day.
Ryan, any comment?
Yeah, no, I think Mike's right that issue and that particular element of this issue is the thing that has the greatest chance of getting through the legislature this session. And, you know, I think that's because it's something that's pretty hard to argue with. You know, I think we all, everybody, believes in fairness of merit and having people being evaluated on their work product and not anything they do in their personal lives. And so, you know, I think that's a pretty straightforward issue. And again, if it would come up for an up or down vote, I think it would pass pretty overwhelmingly. And so, you know, that's something that's also an issue you want to talk about. We were talking about labor and, you know, helping our economy. If you want to attract the best and the brightest talent, you make sure that everybody's welcome. And that's why, you know, the 26 Fortune 500 companies here in Pennsylvania already have practices like this in place against discrimination. And so moving forward, I think this is something that probably will move most quickly.
And it's your generation that really has led the way. I mean, it's a very tolerant generation, and I give you a lot of credit for that. First of all, you're listening to WDIY, listener-supported community public radio. I'm Alan Jennings, host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. My guest tonight, Representative Mike Schlossberg and Representative Ryan McKenzie. Mario Cuomo's boy, Andrew Cuomo, current governor of New York, came out, I think, yesterday in favor of medical marijuana. Colorado leads the way. They've just legalized it and gone commercial with it. Personally, I think, you know, alcohol is so much more dangerous than marijuana use is. Is there anything that Pennsylvania is going to do on this issue, or are we going to be laggards on the issue of reforming marijuana laws?
Well, I would say that I don't anticipate anything will happen on marijuana legalization in the near future here in Pennsylvania. But I do think in our society and our system here in the United States, we do have this opportunity where states can experiment with laws. And Colorado is certainly a big experiment, I would say.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, every other state in the union is going to be looking at the long-term effects and impacts of legalization there, analyzing it very closely. And, you know, I think that's going to be a big determining factor as we move forward in what other states do.
Mike?
I agree with a lot of what you just said, Alan, in that I think alcohol is more dangerous than marijuana. If somebody wants to get high in their home and they're not going to bother anybody, I literally couldn't care less.
This, sit on the couch eating Doritos and watching reruns of
I'm watching The Wall, whereas when you're drunk, you're more likely to get out
and put yourself in a stupid position. In a car accident.
I do favor legalization of medical marijuana, particularly given that there's cases where THC, the active component marijuana, is the only thing that can alleviate pain or suffering, or in some seizure cases actually alleviate life-threatening symptoms. I do favor decriminalization of marijuana because I couldn't care less if somebody wants to get high unless, and here's my one unless, there is no scientific way right now to chemically if you're drunk and you're pulled over and you're driving drunk and the officer gives you a breathalyzer test, he can determine from your breathalyzer test whether or not you're drunk. There's no companion for marijuana. We've got to figure out a way that that law enforcement has the opportunity to determine that nobody is driving while under the influence of marijuana. That's the one qualm that I have, is that we need to still be able to protect our roads. Now, related, my biggest issue, education. There's a lot of talk. There's not enough money for public education. The state of Colorado is expected to generate $70 million in tax revenue this year. Pennsylvania is bigger and could sell more marijuana, and we could be looking at hundreds of millions of dollars in marijuana. If somebody wants to get stoned and in the process pay for a teacher, knock yourself out.
Yeah. Is there a single, we've got to abbreviate our responses here. Is there a single issue for which you would fall on your sword? I mean, where you would be willing to lose the election? You talked about, voting your conscience, Ryan. Where you would be willing to take take the risk of losing re-election in order to promote or support or oppose, for that matter.
For me, there's a lot of things. Look, I love this job. I will fight tooth and nail to retain it. But I know I could get another job. I could get a job in the private sector and make a very good living and see my wife and my kids more. And frankly, in my situation, I already did it. The last thing you're ever supposed to do is vote on a tax hike your first year in office. I voted to raise gas taxes. I did. And I did it because I thought it was the right thing from a jobs perspective and from a safety perspective. And I would do it again and again and again. And if people don't like it, they will throw me out. I don't want that to happen. I'll do anything I can to keep this job because I do love it. But I don't love it so much that I'm willing to sacrifice what I believe in.
Right.
I think there are a lot of issues that I'm very passionate about. But the freeing thing to be able to vote your conscience and what you believe in is what Mike said. It's the belief and the ability in yourself to go and do something else. And so if the voters of my district vote me out of office because they feel that I made the wrong decision, then that's their decision and that's up to them. And hopefully I represent them well all the time. But, at the end of the day, when you're sitting in that chamber, you have to do what you think's right. And it's not always easy, but it might end up costing you your job, but you have to do it.
Is there a legislative proposal that you would love to offer, but it has no chance of passing?
I have already. Early voting. I want Pennsylvania to not be one of the 15 states that doesn't allow for early voting.
Ryan?
That's a great question. I think as I've talked about, I focus on things that both I believe in and are able to get across the goal line. And so, I've really feel like I've found a sweet spot in terms of being a pragmatist, but also holding on to your core convictions. So that's really where I head, is things that I think also have a chance of getting across the goal line, because at the end of the day, that's why people send me there. It's to get things done.
Right. This is a question really that won't apply to Mike, but the Tea Party and its role in Republican politics. Do you worry about getting opposed from your right? Because, you're reasonably moderate. I mean, you're an old style Republican to listen to you. There are lots of them out there. All I had to do was watch the returns of in Tom Mueller's defeat of Scott Ott, as the Republican suburbs come in late and Mueller maintained his lead. I thought he was dead. But, it was clear that a lot of Republicans in the suburbs voted for Mueller. Now, Mueller was a lifelong Republican. Do you worry about getting challenged from the right?
I don't. The reason I say that is because I think at least since I've been involved in politics, it's always been the Republican Party is a diverse party. Sometimes people tend to think that it's a monolithic entity where everybody believes the same thing and everybody's in line with the Tea Party or everybody's in line with the establishment. And at least since I've been involved, that's not the case. So, you've always, since I've come into office, you're always taking into consideration those different parts of the party, different parts of the electorate. So, again, you can't worry about that stuff. You really just have to do what you believe is right. And, you know, sometimes you have disagreements with those in your own party over different issues. And, you know, so be it. But at the end of the day, you have to do what you think's right there.
We're going to run out of time. One last quick question. 10 or 20 years from now, how will you want to be remembered? Ryan?
I want to be remembered as somebody who has done the right thing for my home community. I think it is a tremendous honor that I really take to heart is representing the home district where you grew up. Oftentimes when I go door to door, you run into your old teachers, you run into parents of your friends, and I want them to remember me as somebody who was in this job for the right reasons and got things done.
15 or 20 seconds, Mike, can you answer that one?
Ryan, I'm a little annoyed because you took the words out of my mouth. I want to be remembered as the guy who cared about the job more than he cared about re-election. And obviously, and this is obvious based on what I've said, I want to be remembered as the guy that helped to save the Allentown School District.
We've got two all-stars in the state legislature out of Lehigh Valley. Actually, we have lots of all-stars, and Lehigh Valley's always sent a quality delegation to the Pennsylvania legislature. Tonight, I was lucky enough, and you as listeners were lucky enough to listen to Representative Ryan McKenzie, Republican from the East Penn, Parkland area, Mike Schlossberg, Allentown, part of Parkland, I think, Democrat in the state legislature. Two young guys with great political futures ahead of them. I'm Alan Jennings, your host of Lehigh Valley Discourse. Thanks for joining us. Neil, take it away.
Love is but a song we sing. Fears that we will die.